This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are now 4 days away from the election, and thousands of votes continue to be cast daily in Illinois. And while there haven't been any major accusations of election interference here, there have been some individual bad actors who have been trying to spread mis- and disinformation and trying to tamper with people's right to vote. Here is a short compilation of news on misinformation that's been happening in Pennsylvania.
During that rally, the former president brought up suspected fraud in the Susquehanna Valley, referencing an incident regarding voter registration forms in Lancaster County.
If you have a mail-in ballot, get that damn ballot in, please, immediately.
A clip posted by James Blair, political director of Donald Trump's campaign, appears to show two uniformed officers outside the Bucks County Administrative Office in Doylestown, setting up a sign cutting off the line for those who would make it inside before the 5 p.m. deadline. At 3:14 p.m., conservative activist Scott Pressler amplified the confusion.
This is kind of an emergency. I need your full attention, please. If you live in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, you contact your county commissioners right now. Anybody in line has the right to vote.
Well, I think most of us are concerned about information and misinformation getting out there.
Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro put out a statement today about those allegations, saying in part this morning on X that Trump is trying to use the same playbook he did in 2020 to try to overturn the election.
All right, we're going to talk more about that a little later in the show. But for the first half of our program today, we're going to be talking about what experts have been seeing on the ground and how you can ensure a smooth voting process. Ann Sullivan is co-chair of the Mis- and Disinformation Task Force of the League of Women Voters of Illinois. And welcome to the 21st Show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Also with us is Lawrence Norton, Vice President of the Elections and Government Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, which is part of New York University's School of Law. Lawrence, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And finally, Arjun Tucker is Senior Editor for our home station, WILL, Illinois Public Media. Pretty new in that role. Arjun, welcome to the 21st Show for the first time, I think.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brian.
Listeners, you can join us today at 800-222-9455, especially if you have voted. Maybe you early voted, maybe you mail-in voted or went to one of those drop boxes. How was your voting experience? Did you feel safe casting your ballot? Do you feel confident in how your ballot is collected and how it's going to be handled? Let us know what you think and what questions you might have. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, and we're going to get into this idea of mis- and disinformation. Maybe a good place to start is talking about those two terms and why they're different and why those differences are important.
Sure. So misinformation is really false information that's shared inadvertently. So it might be somebody, you know, trying to help a friend to know how to fill out their mail ballot and whether they should use a felt tip pen or not. And they don't realize that the information that they're sharing is false. So it's really not, doesn't have ill intent. Disinformation is really bad actors trying to specifically suppress your vote or mislead you about candidates or voting information. And that could be, you know, everything from foreign bad actors setting up bots to make comments on digital media, or that could be Facebook groups where disinformation is shared. So there's one is really much more malicious than the other.
All right. So what sort of examples of mis and or disinformation are you seeing specifically in Illinois?
Well, specifically in Illinois, we are all with the digital media universe that we live in. We're all subject to kind of the same mis- and disinformation that we're seeing around the country. There are down ballot races, some places in Illinois where the integrity of the election might be called into question after it's all over and the ballots are starting to be counted. So those are false rumors about, for example, when to vote, where to vote, how to vote. You know, I mentioned that don't use a Sharpie to fill out your mail ballot rumor. Those are all things that maybe could cause the election results to be questioned on the other end. And then there is just the rumors that are always out there. I think in particular in Illinois, we hear the one about non-citizens voting quite a bit, which is really interesting because, you know, for political reasons, there were thousands of people shipped here to Illinois on buses to Chicago as a sanctuary city. And now that has been flipped. And it's the rumor is that those people were actually brought here specifically to vote. And I just want to be clear, 100% clear, that non-citizen voting is extremely rare. There are huge implications for somebody that is in this country seeking asylum, perhaps hoping to be on a path to citizenship. And if they cast a vote in an election or they register to vote, that could really impact them by being deported, by being thrown in jail, you know, for committing a felony. So any information that's out there about, you know, hordes of non-citizens showing up at the polls or showing up to register to vote is completely false.
It's hard enough to get citizens to vote, let alone non-citizens to care about elections.
Exactly.
You know, you've mentioned now this thing a couple of times about the Sharpie and the pen. Let's clear up the confusion. What writing implement do I need to use to fill out a ballot?
You can just use a regular pen, but I also would, I like to amplify our local election authorities. So in Champaign County, that is your Champaign County clerk. There's also the Illinois State Board of Elections. Here in Cook County, it's the Cook County clerk, and they have all the information you need about how to fill out your mail ballot online. So they are the ultimate authority, not the League of Women Voters. But the reason for that Sharpie rumor is that, you know, a Sharpie can sometimes bleed through the paper. And the ballots are actually designed so that if you mark a bubble on the front half and you flip it over on the reverse half, even if the ink has bled through, it's not going to mark a different bubble on the other side.
So they're careful not to put the bubble for, yes, I want XYZ judge to be elected, exactly opposite of the presidential bubble on the front side, for example.
Correct.
Okay. Lawrence Norton, let's bring you to the conversation. How does what you've heard here track with what the Brennan Center has been seeing across the country?
Yeah, it very consistent. I would say, unfortunately, the information environment around elections may be worse than we've ever seen. And I would say there are a few reasons for that. One is that what I would call the election denialist movement domestically in the United States, the folks that are trying to cast doubt about the legitimacy of our elections are better organized and better funded than we have seen. There's much more use of video that can be often deceptively edited to spread false information about our elections. And there are now apps that people use to share that information. Some of them are created by these organizations, but some of them are on social media platforms like X. Elon Musk created an election integrity community where a lot of these misleading and false videos are circulating. And the second is that I would emphasize is foreign actors are much more engaged than they have been in the past in circulating false information about our elections. The intelligence community has been more explicit and specific than they have ever been about foreign actors, Iran, Russia, China, trying to spread false information, denigrate our democracy, undermine confidence in elections, and that we should expect to continue to see that. And, you know, just in the past few days, we have seen Russian manipulated or created videos circulating, purporting to show fraud, purporting to show ballots being destroyed that have been debunked. And I unfortunately think we can expect to see more of that, especially in the post-election period.
And we've also seen actual efforts at physical destruction of ballots, right? Can you talk about what happened in, was it Oregon or Washington State out on the West
Coast?
Yeah,
it was actually both.
Okay.
Interestingly, two drop boxes that really were only a 20-minute drive from each other. So, you know, you can draw your own conclusions from that fact. There was there was an effort, which is there was a successful effort to burn some of the ballots that were in the drop boxes. Usually there are pretty good security measures in place on these drop boxes to prevent a fire from spreading within them. But in fact, some of them were burned. I think the good news is, I mean, there's a few points of good news about that effort. One is we do a really good job in the US of kind of tracking mail ballots and knowing which ballots are, as they are, when they're sent out, attached to which individual. And so all of the people who were impacted should be able to cast a new ballot that will count. And there's been very good communication around that. The second thing I would say is, and this goes to a broader issue, since 2020, law enforcement and election officials are in much better coordination than they have been in the past, much better communication. There's been a lot of planning. And so when this happened, the local law enforcement in both Washington and Oregon worked very closely with the election officials on getting out messages about not only what happened and not only that it was illegal, but also that the system was secure and they would be able to find a way to ensure that anybody who was impacted by that could vote. And I think that was a really important message for people to hear.
Oh, yeah, that is definitely good to hear. Last thing about this, I've seen conflicting reports, or maybe I guess a better way to say that would be uncertain reports as to motivation, right? Apparently there was a pro-Palestinian, pro-Gaza message scrawled near at least one of these boxes, but there were some questions about, you know, doesn't necessarily mean that it was Palestinian activists who wrote that, because you could just write it if you wanted to sort of misdirect authorities as to your motives.
Yeah, look, I think trying to figure out the political motivations of people who engage in election interference or election threats or violence can often be a fool's errand. Often you're dealing with people who are very unstable. I think the most important thing in all of this is for us to be communicating very clearly that these things are crimes, that they won't be tolerated, that people will be prosecuted for them. In the past, I think too often that didn't happen. And it may sound a little bit silly, but that deterrent reminder really can have a big effect on people saying, you know what, maybe I should stop and think about whether or not I really want to do this, because there could be real consequences for it.
All right. Well, that deterrence and the thought of deterrence for misbehavior is a good transition to bring Arjun Tucker into the conversation, senior editor at Illinois Public Media. You reported on an altercation in Champaign County involving an election worker. What happened there?
Yeah, that's right, Brian. So about last weekend here in Champaign County, officials found that there was a voter over the weekend who came into an early voting site, and they were wearing a hat expressing support for former President Donald Trump, obviously running for presidency again, and wearing political, you know, clothing that expresses support for any political candidate within a polling site, within 100 feet of a polling site, is considered electioneering, which is illegal under Illinois law and potentially in many places across the country. So the voter was told by the election judges, election officials, that they need to remove their hat. The voter refused to remove the hat. And that's where, you know, Champaign County Clerk Aaron Ammons says that the moment got contentious. The voter began filming the incident. And it appears that the voter who was wearing the hat got into a physical fight with another voter. And what we're told is that it resulted in three people there who were at that polling site leaving and not being able to vote. As part of that, the election officials called law enforcement, and it doesn't appear that there's been any arrests or charges in the incident, but they're still investigating. What we do know is that Champaign County Clerk Aaron Ammons is saying this has been the most bizarre election that he's administered in his years administering elections here, and he's been expressing more concern with county officials about possible threats to voters coming to cast a ballot and election workers who are there to make sure voters can cast their ballots.
We need to take a break in about a minute here, but you also reported people were filming and observing a voting center, and apparently this was illegal too. Say more about that.
Sure. So under Illinois state law, you need explicit permission from the election authority. So here, the county clerk, to film and you know, take videos, take pictures, in a polling site. So they have to get permission, and that it appears that there were poll watchers and another folks taking videos, taking pictures, and that's not permitted. So there was some pushback from the county clerk telling folks that they can't do that. There also were folks, you know, observing poll watchers, and you need specific credentials in order to be able to do that. So the county's been trying to get the word out to make sure folks are aware about that.
All right, we are going to take a break. We're going to continue this conversation when we come back. If you want to join us, the number is 800-222-9455. We're talking about issues we've seen around voting and elections as we are just now a few days away from the end of the 2024 election cycle. My guests for this conversation are Arjun Tucker, who is a senior editor at Illinois Public Media, our producing station, Lawrence Norden, vice president of the Elections and Government Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, part of NYU's law school, and Ann Sullivan, co-chair of the Mis and Disinformation Task Force at the League of Women Voters of Illinois. Again, 800-222-9455. More to come. Stay with us. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. With election season coming to a close next week, we are looking at some of the issues that have come up around elections, including mis and disinformation incidents that have happened both here in Illinois and across the country. My guests for this are Lawrence Norden, vice president of the Elections and Government Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, Ann Sullivan, co-chair of the Mis and Disinformation Task Force with the League of Women Voters of Illinois, and Arjun Tucker, senior editor at our home station, WILL Illinois Public Media. If you want to join us today, the number is 800-222-9455. And let's go now to David, who's calling from Bloomington on line one. David, thanks for calling in. How was your voting experience?
I have to say mine was very good. I voted at the McLean County Election Center, and I felt like there was a ton of workers there. They really scrutinized my signature since I was voting early. And I know many people in both parties that are working as election judges, so I really felt like it was a much more transparent thing. And then the other thing, I have volunteered working with immigrants, and I can tell you that any immigrant that's applying for status is made aware of Code 8, Section 1182, that states that anybody who votes in any local constitutional provisional statute, ordinance, or regulation will be deemed either inadmissible or deportable and therefore barred from admission or subject to removal from the United States. It's a critical thing that immigrants are told because there's no willful involved in that. And so that means that even if they were unaware that they shouldn't be voting, they are still held responsible for casting a vote if they don't have status in the United States as citizen. So that's something I can tell you from personal experience that every immigrant that I've ever worked with that's in the process of adjusting status is made aware of they don't have the ability to vote until they are citizens.
David, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your experience with us. I appreciate it. And Lawrence, let me come to you. So we talked, and I guess this sort of dovetails with what David was saying there, and we also heard Ann talk about this false idea that there's this rampant voting among non-citizens. And that is just part of the groundwork that's being laid. I know the Brennan Center is nonpartisan, but I mean, I will say we've certainly seen from the Trump campaign and a lot of his allies sort of laying this groundwork, this idea of how could Kamala Harris possibly get 85 million votes, presupposing she does. Talk about, you know, these claims alleging fraud, and maybe you can debunk some of the common things that you've heard out there.
Yeah, I think you're quite right. The effort to kind of pre-bunk election results with conspiracy theories is more sophisticated and more organized than we've ever seen before. A lot of the groups that are involved in this effort are much better funded than they have been in the past. Cleta Mitchell, who was on that call with President Trump when he contacted Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State of Georgia, and asked for 11,000, him to find 11,000 vote. Her group is often at the center of his stuff. They had a $7 million budget in 2020. Their budget is, I think, well over $45 million this year, and that's just one group of many. This effort has included the filing of a lot of frivolous litigation, more than we've ever seen before. Ahead of the election, close to 200 cases now have been brought, and many of them are just attempts. Really, they're not. A lot of them have already been dismissed. They're not necessarily very substantive cases, but they do amplify a lot of the lies and conspiracies that we've been hearing about, whether it's hordes of non-citizens voting or voting machines that can't be trusted or other kind of typical, frankly, lies that are being promoted about the election. So I can talk about a couple of things. One is the voter rolls, because that has really been, and who is allowed to vote, that has really been the focus of a lot of this stuff. States have many layers of security in place to make sure that only eligible citizens can vote. First of all, anybody that's a new registrant has to provide ID. They have to swear under a criminal penalty that they are a citizen of the United States. And remember, when they are going to vote, they are leaving a paper record behind. They are saying who they are. They are providing their address. And then they are they're signing their name when they go to vote. So it's kind of a foolish thing to go vote when you're not eligible to, given all of that and given the criminal penalties that there are behind doing that. And in fact, study after study, investigation after investigation, including by some very conservative attorneys general and secretary of state in states like Georgia and Texas and Ohio, have shown that this kind of fraud is vanishingly rare, as Anne said. So I think it's important for people to know that there are multiple layers of security, including regular audits and updating of the registration rolls to make sure that it's eligible citizens that are on the rolls and nobody else. Another one that I'll just mention really quickly is voting machines, because that has, as we get into the voting period, a lot more of the rumors that catch on and go viral are about the voting process. And I think one of the most important things to know about our voting machines in the US is now 98% of voting now happens with a paper ballot or a paper record of the vote. And we look at those paper records after Election Day. We audit election results to make sure that the machines are giving us accurate tallies, and that should give people a lot of confidence in vote totals.
Well, so, and people are going to continue seeing this this information, misinformation, disinformation about the election and some of these claims we heard Lawrence debunking there. How can people safeguard themselves? What do you have some advice on, you know, pause before you retweet sort of thing?
Yes, that's exactly it. I mean, the most important advice that we have is, you know, just to develop an incredibly healthy sense of skepticism. So, you know, we say, my co-chair and I say that, you know, before we started this job, we had one cup of coffee while we were reading the news, and now it takes three cups of coffee because we want to source absolutely everything that we read to make sure that it actually is being reported in more than one place, and that it's actually a legitimate news source. So, you know, I think the biggest advice to voters, as far as not inadvertently, let's just think best case scenario, misinformation, right? To avoid inadvertently sharing something that's not true, is just when something that you read kind of makes you emotional, I think that's a really good trigger for you to say, I'm not going to hit the share button quite yet. I'm going to dig a little bit deeper and find out, you know, whether this is something that is legitimate or not. And we have a lot of resources for that kind of media literacy, as well as other tips to help fight mis and disinformation. on our website, lwvil.org. We've got about 6 videos on there on different topics of disinformation. And one that's really germane to this election security question is a webinar that we did with the public information officer from the Illinois State Board of Elections. It was back in March before the primary. But he spoke to us for about an hour about all of the ways that Illinois is ensures that we have a secure election. And it's really interesting listening if people, you know, have an hour to spare to really, you know, feel confident in our elections here in the state of Illinois.
Yeah, no, I really like what you said there about if something triggers one or you know, sort of makes one feel emotionally like outrage or even enthusiasm, maybe pause, maybe look into that because you may be right for some manipulation, even though nobody likes to think they're manipulable. But yeah. OK, Arjun, last question to you. And let's end on kind of a practical news you can use thing. What can I wear to a polling place and what can I not wear? And can I film with my camera phone?
Yeah, it's a great question, Brian. So I want to emphasize, you know, people are free to wear political clothing outside of a polling place, you know, wherever they want to. I mean, that's protected free speech in this country. The issue is that in state law, when you're within 100 feet of a polling place, that's where you can't have political activity, political materials, and that includes political clothing. So hat, shirts that express support for a candidate, for a given particular issue, that's where that's regulated and that's not allowed. That's considered electioneering under our state law. So, you know, if you're outside of 100 feet, more than welcome to wear political clothing. That's not an issue. It's when you're within that 100 feet, what they call campaign-free zone, where you can't wear clothing with a political message. In terms of filming, the purpose behind that, as I understand it, is to discourage, you know, voter intimidation or pressure. So folks who get permission, that might be poll watchers with credentials, other individuals, members of the media, those folks can get permission from the election authority in their area, and then they're more than welcome to film or take photos, videos. Otherwise, you know, if you're wanting to take a picture of your voting sticker, you can do that outside of your polling place. Some authorities, I believe Champaign County has a space where you can take voter selfies. So that's you know, a more regulated, already given permission. But the best advice is just check with your local election clerks to see where you can and cannot take photos or videos.
All right. Arjun Tucker, Ann Sullivan, Lawrence Norden, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st Show. Great conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.